Thank you, Malcolm, and good morning, everybody. My name is Nancy Scott, as Malcolm said, and today I'm going to speak to you a little bit about conducting an impact evaluation of a faith-based OVC support program in Zambia. And a little overview of the presentation, going to give you some context with an introduction and background, talk about the challenges that we had trying to design an end-of-project evaluation, impact evaluation, talk about the design and methods that we landed on and used, the key findings, and some of our conclusions and recommendations. So the FABRIC project is the acronym is for the Community Faith-Based Regional Initiative for Orphans and Vulnerable Children. It was a five-year USAID PEPFAR-funded program implemented by FHI 360 in Zambia, Namibia, and South Africa. I'll only be talking today about the work in Zambia and what we moved from there. The aim of the program overall was to improve the quality of life for OVC and their families by developing the capacity of faith-based organizations to coordinate and deliver essential support services to the OVC. So this diagram shows a little bit about the structure of the project. The FABRIC project, like I said, implemented by FHI 360, worked with the implementing agency, or a large umbrella coordinating body called the Expanded Church Response in Zambia, who worked with 15 different faith-based organizations to help coordinate those little people under that, our volunteer caregivers. And in turn, they delivered supportive services to about 10,000 OVC in Zambia. Now, these services ranged with different interventions, but it went all across the different OVC programming domains, from health and nutrition, legal support, shelter and care, all across the OVC programming domains. And we as BU, Center for Global Health, collaborated with FHI 360 at the end of their project to evaluate the impact of the project. And we provided the technical support, and FHI 360 provided some access into the programs. So we had some challenges with thinking through how we were going to actually do this. And several of those stemmed from the fact that there were no outcome indicators. I think inherent in any emergency response, and particularly with PEPFAR, there were no outcome indicators collected at baseline that could really help us understand some of the change or impact. And there was also no outcome evaluation framework in place. So that gave us a little bit of, posed a little bit of a conundrum of how we're going to do this. And especially thinking through the issue of attribution. With so much going on in these communities and other programs and these children participating and receiving services from government and from other faith-based organizations and NGOs, how are we going to figure out what, if any, changes were attributed to this program? We also had a short timeline dealing with five different institutional review boards. We had to think through who we were going to compare these kids to because we didn't have baseline data. And we also had no long-term individual child-level monitoring data over time. So we thought a little bit about it, and we knew that our evaluation research questions would be, we wanted to understand within a bigger evaluation, looking at just the kiddos, we wanted to understand the well-being, how the well-being of FABRIC beneficiaries compares to that of similar children living in the same communities at the end of the program. So we had one timeline. And then if we could add a little more rigor, we would love to see how this well-being of the beneficiaries and those same similar comparison children changed over time. So this is what we did. We did a non-randomized post-test only quasi-experimental design with a two-stage random sampling strategy, starting with the project sites, and then selected the households from there. Group one, that I'm going to call the FABRIC sample, was the children who were and their households who were currently on the project rosters at the time of the EOPE, end of project evaluation. And so those rosters were complete at that time. And then the group two was a community sample of randomly selected children matched on age and gender who were not on the FABRIC project rosters. So remember, in the bottom half of the slide tells us that from 2005 to 2010, that X is the intervention. That fabric sample received different levels, different intensity, different types of support from this program. We came in March 2010 to do the EOPE and looked at the two different samples of children and did an observation. And then we followed those same children to January 2011, and then we followed them again, the same children, in May 2011. Our methods, we used a little bit of mixed methods strategy so that we could really understand the bigger picture and try to fully triangulate and see what was going on in these communities. And we did a quantitative household survey, and our analytic data set that I'm presenting here is on 300 households that participated in all three of those data observation points in the previous slide. So we're looking at about 900 observations, and we also did some qualitative work with in-depth interviews, focus groups, and document review of project documents. So what did we find? Well, we're pretty confident, and I won't go through this whole slide, but we're pretty confident that the households were very similar, as opposed looking at the guardian traits and looking at our household traits. They had similar household composition and dependency ratios. And when we did an additional analysis on the household assets, there was no difference in the mean household asset scores. So we're looking in the same communities, which is good to know. We're also pretty confident that our matching strategy worked when we selected the comparison children, as you can see by the sex and the age. And we're also seeing in this table on the left, pretty confident that the fabric program, their targeting strategy using eligibility criteria such as orphaning, HIV prevalence, and the HIV rates in the children or their guardians. It was unclear the exact strategy, but there's some eligibility criteria. It seems to have worked. Also, the supports received. You see that the fabric group reported receiving much more services, a little bit of a spillover into the community group, but reported receiving more services. Some good news is that after we went back a year later, or 9 months later and a year later, is that these faith-based organizations still are providing some level of support. It's not as intense, the 55%, as it was at the end of the project, but they're still providing about 25% of the children report receiving services. So they're in a different analysis is the capacity of these faith-based organizations. So that's encouraging. Some of our key findings at time zero, which was the end of the project had closed, we saw that the fabric kids had very high school registration rates, and it was higher than the community. In fact, 100% of their school-aged girls in fabric were registered for school. The fabric children, however, had worse nutritional status for a number of different indicators than the community. And the girls themselves seemed to be the younger girls, the 5 to 11-year-old girls, seem to be worse than the comparison group and worse than the boys. So those 5 to 11-year-olds, they're really vulnerable, and it's coming through in their nutrition status, even at the end of this five-year program. We also saw that, excluding HIV, fabric children had more chronic illness, potentially opportunistic infections, but they reported a more chronic illness. So then what happened when we went back to these same children, these same households a year later, or 9 months later, in January 2011, we see less school registration accounting for school not being in session or time variables, all of that. We still see less registration overall. But we still see that the fabric group was significantly more likely to be registered in school. Some of the qualitative data suggested that the kids that weren't registered but were eligible for school was because they didn't have money, they didn't have uniforms, or they didn't have supplies. We also saw, on a different level, we saw the household capacity to pay, or willingness to pay, I guess, for school fees was much lower than the community household, but we still saw them improve over time. So here's a little bit of qualitative data that shows that this education support reaching the individual children, targeted at the individual children, actually extended beyond to help with the family and household level. When we look at the food and nutrition, we see, as I mentioned before, Fabric was generally worse than the community. And again, that difference, when you stratify by age and gender, is really seen in those 5 to 11-year-old girls. Both groups do improve between rounds 1 and 2. Now remember, there's no program, no Fabric program operating at this point. Between round 1 and 2, most likely because of the harvest, but the community improves more. They're significant. And our qualitative data suggests on that for a number of different reasons, the Fabric households have lower food production than the community households. They have less access to even the subsidized fertilizer that the government provides. They have less ability to rent or borrow harvesting tools. So they're harvesting later in the season, so part of their crop has potentially gone to waste. So there are a number of reasons in our qualitative data that support that finding. When we look at the chronic illness within the household, we see that Fabric children had more chronic illness than the community at each time, but there's no interaction with over time. It doesn't really change over time. In the Guardians, they were worse than the community, but they seem to have gotten better over time. So we're a little unclear as to why that happened, and it's not the Fabric program. Remember, at this point, no Fabric program's operating. So when we look at a continued analysis of a little bit of a bigger cohort that participated in that T1 and T2, we see even more starkly that the girls age 5 to 11 are very, very vulnerable. Some of their psychosocial measures are much worse. Their nutrition indicators are worse, and their malnutrition, and in fact their BMI and anthropometry, is much worse than any of the other groups, and changes negatively as opposed to some of the other groups that change positively. We also see a high prevalence of abuse that's not different between groups. It happens to the boys, it happens to the girls, and it's not different over time. So there's a lot of sexual abuse and a bit of physical and emotional abuse as well. But those analyses are ongoing. So some of our conclusions. We saw some challenges and missed opportunities because, in large part, because there was not a strong evaluation framework in place from project inception. We saw a lot of indications that the targeting was successful and that the Fabric program, when they recruited according to the eligibility criteria. We saw that the model potentially is an appropriate entree into the community because the volunteers were able to find those children and implement and target them appropriately. But we did still see widespread vulnerabilities in the community and high unmet need. So the question of sustained impact and attribution still lingers. Even after we were able to, you know, put as rigorous of a method as possible by having a comparison group, by tracking the same children over time into place given the lack of baseline. And so we see some that possibly there was an indication of change, some definite no, and others there's unclear. So our recommendations going forward would be to focus interventions and target households and communities, not just the individual children, age and gender appropriate programming. And in January 2011, USAID implemented a new evaluation policy that really focuses on learning and applying rigorous evaluation so that we don't miss these opportunities. Now it's up to us as programmers and evaluators to make sure that policy is operationalized, because there's so much learning that can be done with this. And within that, establish longitudinal cohorts so that we can really find out what's happening to these these children over time. So thank you. That's our first presentation.
Thank you. Thanks.